welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. The Senate Ag Committee released a long-awaited Farm Bill discussion draft this week. Committee Chairman John Bozeman joins the show to discuss what's included in the bill for rural America and its path forward. But first, here are this week's headlines. President Donald Trump is asking Congress to approve more than $11 billion in farm aid as part of a broader emergency spending package to address the costs of the war in Iran. The request includes $10 billion for producers of row and specialty crops, plus $1.1 billion for Florida farmers recovering from winter storm losses. The proposal comes as farm groups and lawmakers push for assistance to help producers facing low commodity prices and high input costs. The supplemental spending package also includes a provision to allow year-round nationwide sales of E15, a higher ethanol blend fuel backed by corn growers and biofuel producers. A new USDA report shows most states would be required to help pay for SNAP benefits under a provision enacted in last year's One Big Beautiful Bill Act. According to the 2025 payment error rates released by USDA, only 9 states had error payment rates below the law's 6% threshold, allowing them to avoid the new cost-sharing requirement. USDA reported a national payment error rate of 10.62%. Beginning in October 2027, states with error rates above 6% will be required to cover a portion of SNAP benefit costs, which historically have been fully federally funded. The release comes as Democrats and anti-hunger groups continue pressing for a broader delay of the SNAP cost-sharing provisions in the Farm Bill. The Senate Ag Committee released a Farm Bill discussion draft this week. Chairman John Bozeman joins us to discuss what's included in the bill.
Well, we've been working on this for a long time, and these bills really aren't about Democrats and Republicans. They really are about trying to help the American farmer and rural America. So I think the most important thing, you know, we were able to get so much done in the Working Families Tax Cut Bill, the Big Beautiful Bill. But we had about 15% we needed to clean up that's policy related. I think probably the most important thing of that was the getting the loan limits up to date. The 2018 Farm Bill, which expired in 2023, was based on 2012 data. And so the loan limits for 2012 compared to now seems like forever ago. And they just didn't work. So if you're building a structure, borrowing money for various purposes, whatever you're borrowing for, it costs a lot more money now than it used to. So we had to raise those caps. We did a lot for rural America. We did a lot for horticulture. I think this farm bill, this 15% that we weren't able to do, really does a lot for our especially crop producers. Which is very, very important. And so it's just everybody working together. We had 100 bills that were bipartisan bills that we included. So this really is a team effort of the Ag Committee as a whole.
And as we saw reaction come in from ag groups, stakeholders all across the ag and food supply chain, a lot of praise for that bipartisan or for that farm bill progress in general, but still some reaction over some of the things that were left out of that bill. Let's start with California's Proposition 12, there was no language in there to fix that. I mean, do you see a path forward for that? And what does that look like in your eyes?
I do. I'm very much in favor of Prop 12. On the other hand, my challenge was to the pork producers, you know, find me a Democrat in the Senate that will publicly support it now. And there are none. So it makes it really difficult. If we had an amendment or if we went with it, I think it would jeopardize passing the farm bill in general out of committee. If we included an amendment, which I don't mind anybody doing, then you're going to have a partisan amendment which shows weakness. Right now, this provision is in the House bill, so we will pass our bill, go to conference, and then that ultimately will sort it out. Okay? I think there's a fair chance of that being included at that point. We'll just have to wait and see. But right now, we simply don't have the votes on the Democratic side for that provision.
And one of the other big issues is the delay of that state SNAP cost share provision enacted in budget reconciliation last year. Democrats that I've spoken to have said, you know, that's kind of their first negotiating. That's what will bring them to the table on this farm bill. I mean, you've said that you're not open to reopening that conversation, but you know, now that the discussion draft is out and with the feedback you've received since then, are you open to those discussions?
Yeah, and I had some feedback prior to that officially going out, and understand there's legitimate concern there. We did two things when we passed SNAP reform. One was changing the eligibility, requiring work requirements. And as a result, that's really bent the curve down. We basically said, you know, if you're a healthy adult, you know, you're not gonna lay on the couch and watch television. You got to get to work, or you got to sing in the choir, volunteer, do something, okay? That part is separate than the problem that we had with the states administering the program. And they, I think everybody agrees, did a very, very poor job of that. When you're just receiving money and there's no oversight, there's no incentive, you know, to actually do it right. Their error rates were atrocious. And so we envisioned that in a year or so, they would do the right thing and then get it down at 6% or below, and the cost to them would be zero. It's been much more difficult than we anticipated. Our states are working very, very hard. These aren't Democrat or Republican states. These are just states that really are trying to get their error rates down. But because it has been so difficult, it's costing them a lot of money. So we're talking about seeing if we can remedy that. We're talking to Senator Klobuchar, who's been very helpful, really, with all of these things. And then also the administration and our leadership to see if we can come to some sort of resolution that will take some of the pressure off as they figure this out.
And this is a discussion draft right now, and the next step would be a markup by the committee. You know, when do you plan to do that? Still in that July work period?
Yep, we're going to leave for a couple of weeks over the 4th of July and then come back, and we plan on marking up between then and the recess in August.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The Trump administration released a supplemental spending request to address impacts of the war in Iran. I asked Senate Ag Committee Chairman John Bozeman about the $11 billion in farm aid and a provision to allow year-round sales of E15 included in that request.
Well, we've worked hard with Senator Hovind. He's done a tremendous job in leading the charge, and we're excited. I think this is a great step in the right direction. And, you know, I'm excited that we're doing this. We've been working on this now for several months. And the good news is Congress has been receptive in the past. I think they will. I think that it will stay in the supplemental in the sense that it's something that a lot of people want to vote for. I think it brings votes to the table. That maybe some people wouldn't vote for the military spending, but with ag in there also, that will help generate votes. So not too concerned about that. The farm economy, as you know better than anybody, working with this every day, is really in a difficult situation. And the good news, because of programs like yourself, you know, the good job that AgriPulse does and others, Congress is aware. The public is aware how difficult it is in farm country. And so because of that, we've been able to generate a lot of support.
Yeah, and lawmakers originally had requested $17 billion in farm aid in that package. I mean, something's always better than nothing, but do you think that there'll need to be more aid or additional aid in addition to what's been requested in that?
Well, my attitude is we'll take what we can get and we'll see, you know, how that goes. And certainly if we need more help, then we're not bashful, we'll ask for more. And the president's been receptive in the past, and Congress has been receptive in the past. So the important thing, though, is to get this out as soon as possible. That's really what we're lacking. People, you know, like you in interviewing me, they say, when should this be done? And my answer is always yesterday. You know, this is money that farmers desperately need right now to keep operating.
The other provision included in that supplemental request was year-round E15. I mean, that's kind of passed through the House, now is kind of awaiting an uncertain legislative future in the Senate, but this could be potentially the clearest path for it to make it through. I mean, do you expect it to stay in or see headways when lawmakers begin debating that package?
No, I expect it to stay in, and I think E15 has the votes as a standalone by itself, like it did in the House. We could put it in the farm bill, and it would have a path forward there. We didn't do that in the Senate. The House did, and then they had to take it out because they felt like they could get more votes for the farm bill, more votes for E15 as separate entities. So we respected that. The other problem that we have in the committee, in the Ag Committee, is we really don't have jurisdiction over E15. You know, it involves agriculture. It is all about agriculture. And yet the Environment and Public Works Committee has jurisdiction. Shelley Moore Capito, the chair of that, has been very, very helpful. But again, we don't have jurisdiction. So, and yet, again, working with the Environment and Public Works Committee, I think we'll be able to do whatever we need to do to get this thing passed. I think it's right at the very top. Every farm group that I visit with, this is one of the first things that comes up. And so we're committed to getting it done. And I believe that we have an excellent chance of getting it done this Congress.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Andrew Heineke looks at China's share of U.S. ag imports in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Brazil is gaining market share in China as the U.S. share has decreased, according to the North Dakota State University Agricultural Trade Monitor. This chart shows the U.S. share of China's ag imports from 2017 to 2025. The U.S. share reached its highest point at 19.5% in 2017 before the 2018 trade war between the two countries. It rose to just over 18% after both countries agreed to the Phase 1 trade deal and fell all the way to 7.9% last year following the most recent retaliatory tariff announcement. At the same time, Brazil has been gaining market share in China, which you can see in this next chart. According to the report, Brazil's share has increased from 21 to 27% over this 8-year period, and you can also see the impact that the retaliatory tariffs had on the American share. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Heineke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. The Senate Ag Committee released a long-awaited Farm Bill discussion draft this week. Ann McMillan with Invariant and Tara Smith with Tory Advisory Group joined the panel to discuss it. To begin, Ann, what are your initial takeaways from seeing that text?
If you take a step back, it's a big step forward in the Farm Bill process. I mean, I think a lot of us were sort of cautiously optimistic that the House would able to get this far over the finish line. So having the Senate pick up and continue that momentum is really, really important. I will say that, you know, the bill has a lot of things that are not in it, much like the House bill, but even sort of less things in it than the House bill that will, you know, need to be addressed before I think we can understand if they're what the future prognosis is. So as it's been widely reported, there's no Prop 12 fix. There was no FIFRA uniformity. There was no economic aid. There was, you know, there was a lot. There was no SNAP cost share fix. So I think these are all really critical items that will need to be worked out amongst the Democrats and the Republicans on the committee in order to move forward. But at the end of the day, any step forward is a step forward, and I'm going to take the win.
And like Ian said, lots of very vital provisions within that farm bill text. We're also seeing an increase in loan limits, other vital things for rural America. But there's also a new specialty crop disaster aid program included. I mean, how is this program different than what we've seen before, and how will it benefit producers?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of different disaster programs before, right? They never seem to be quite the same as they were in the past. And I think that can be frustrating for all types of growers, but I think for specialty growers in particular, it can be frustrating for them. You know, they're just a little bit different beast than the row crops. There are so many different commodities with so many different growing seasons, growing regions. They don't have the data we have for row crops. They're not familiar with their local FSA office and don't necessarily spend a lot of time with the folks at the FSA office and know how to operate with them. And so I think having some sort of standardization writ large is going to be a really good thing for specialty crop growers. And, you know, Bozeman teed this up as a discussion draft. And so I'm hopeful that the committee gets a lot of feedback on whether or not this is the standardized program that they want or whether tweaks will actually make things easier. But I think overall, just having the standardization will be a really big step forward for specialty crop growers and hopefully provide them with a little certainty that they just don't have right now.
Yeah. And outside of some of those very important kind of more bipartisan provisions, there's also really steep divides specifically over that nutrition issue. I mean, if you had a crystal ball, I mean, how do you see these negotiations and conversations, discussions playing out ahead of Chairman Bozeman's would like to mark it up during that July work period? But how do you see the discussions playing out between now and then in that markup?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we're going to see a schoolhouse rock kind of farm bill, right? And I probably date myself just by saying that alone. But, it, you know, a markup going to the floor, having a regular conference is probably not the path we're going to see, especially not at this stage in the game. But I think we've seen legislation get done in a lot of really creative ways the last 18 months. And so just because we might not see the schoolhouse rock version, I'm still optimistic that we managed to get something across the finish line. I think, quite frankly, rural America deserves to get a product across the finish line. We've waited long enough. There are critical policy changes that are really needed in some of that text.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper for my branded facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. It's election year, which means control of the House and Senate could shift. I asked Amy McMillan with Invariant how this could influence the farm bill's future.
I don't see a path forward in the Senate without substantive discussion and some sort of agreement on the SNAP issue. The Democrats have really never wavered from their position that the changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill from last year to the SNAP cost share and to the shifting the program responsibility to the states was something that they very strongly disagreed with. And so I do think that that will have to be hashed out in some way in order for the bill to move forward on the Senate. Now, you could have a scenario where, as Tara rightly said, we're not playing like normal farm bill process game anymore. We could skip a few steps. We could have some informal conferences. Who knows? I think there's a lot of options on the table, especially as we get into, a post-November election lame duck. But I think in the short term, I find it difficult that there will be significant momentum in the committee or on the floor without having to deal with that SNAP issue.
Yeah. And Anne, at the beginning of our conversation, you said, I mean, there's those important things in, but there's still a lot of things left out. And that's what we saw a lot of the reaction from. But Farm Aid was left out, year-round E15 was left out, and we're seeing also yesterday, also this week, if we needed more news, those included in the White House's request for that supplemental spending bill. So, I mean, do you think specifically on those Farm Aid and E15 issue that that could stay in the supplemental?
I do. And frankly, I think that's great. Those are really critical issues to rural America. And I think it is really important that those are being highlighted by the administration as something that needs to get done. Now, there could be a scenario where passing E15 and economic aid, you know, before the farm bill may take some air out of that balloon and slow down the momentum. But I'm just hopeful, you know, we all know that rural America and particularly the ag industry is in crisis in a lot of places. Input costs, fertilizer costs, market access. It's a tough road out there and these folks need help. And so I think all of us are just trying to row in the same direction of getting help where it's needed and as fast as possible.
Yeah. And Tara, I want to get your thoughts on that as well. I mean, lawmakers had earlier requested, you know, up to $17 billion in aid. It had kind of been the backroom conversations, but they got that $11 billion, but something's always better than nothing. But I mean, do you think that there'll be enough support to keep that in and the year-round E15 provision in as they debate that supplemental package?
Yeah, I'm optimistic that those things will be able to stay in. I think that what I'm trying to think through a little bit more is what else gets added to it, quite frankly, because that supplemental just with those three items, I'm not sure it makes it across a finish line anyway. So what could get added to that to incentivize passage? So just like with any big bill at the end of the day, I think those vote counting exercises still need to happen. Maybe it's the cost share issue that gets added on. Maybe it's wildfire dollars. I think there are a lot of different options. But, you know, I do think Anne is right in the sense that this issue on cost share does need to be worked out, because I'm not an expert on SNAP policy, but I can count to 60. And at the end of the day, any bill is going to have to make it to 60 votes in the Senate. And so I think we're all just going to have to keep our eyes on that prize. And it may not be our ideal way of getting there. It may be a little bit more creative or a little bit more roundabout to get there. But I'm really hopeful, because I know the One Big Beautiful Bill did a lot of great things for farmers and ranchers. But obviously, there's still a need for tweaks, because we have 900 pages of text that we've all spent the last week working through.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at how inflation is driving your 4th of July cookout costs this year.
If you're shopping for groceries before hosting a party for the 4th of July, prices will account for inflation over the past year, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation's Summer Cookout Cost Survey. This chart shows the average cost for a meal of 10 people adjusted for inflation from 2016 to this year. The cost is nearly $74, which is up 4% from last year, but the average inflation rate over the same time is 4.2%, so the price you'll pay almost perfectly reflects the inflation rate. This second chart shows the average price of everyone's favorite 4th of July cookout foods. Ground beef and burger prices are up due to a small cattle herd because of drought and higher operating costs. Chicken breasts and pork chops are also more expensive this year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond. Led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate are in recess next week, and Independence Day will be observed on Friday, July 3rd. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.